Sports Radio, 104.3 The Fan. All right, Orlando and I have a little bet going here, informal bet. We won't make mention of it, but we will get right to it with Dr. Rick Perea, the performance psychologist whom we've visited with for 8.5 years. I think we've hit the 8.5 year mark on roughly a monthly basis, Dr. Perea, but I want to get right to it. Drew Locke versus Teddy Bridgewater. I watched your Channel 9 segment the other night, and I've heard you use this expression before, but as it applies to Locke and Bridgewater, which of the two is the wolf at the top of the hill, and which of the two is the wolf climbing the hill?
Well, first of all, good morning to both of you gentlemen. Great to be with you. Yeah, you know, Sandy, I'll tell you what, the wolf climbing the hill is usually the person who's not the incumbent, the starter. So in this case, Drew is the wolf at the top of the hill. And really what happens, the wolf at the top of the hill kind of looks around, exhales, kind of gets their breath, their feet underneath them. The wolf climbing the hill is thirsty. They're hungry. They're thinking about really how they can get to their goal and objective. Very focused, very disciplined. The key for Drew Locke is to be able to take his emotions and externalize more of them, because in the past, he's internalized them. And what I mean by that is sometimes you'll see him when he has a bad series, maybe he throws a pick, makes a bad decision. He goes on the sidelines and you can watch his nonverbals and they're not real positive. And that means he's internalizing those expressions. So for him to really maintain, he better get better at externalizing in a positive way. And I'll tell you the way he does it. He's got to self-transcend himself. Stop thinking about me, 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 and become we. And when he does that, he's got a chance to really build the team around him and help himself keep that starting position. Because I'll tell you what, the wolf climbing the hill is always a bit hungrier than that wolf at the top of the hill, and it should make for an exciting competition coming up this summer.
Doc, when you continue to hear about this Aaron Rodgers stuff, I've already asked you the question as far as Drew Locke and Teddy Bridgewater goes, and how do you deal with that? But if you're just in the locker room, how do you deal with that? Because there's been other guys at some point of this season that have been campaigning for other guys. We've seen it with Kareem Jackson talking about, you know, Deshaun Watson. We've seen other guys just kind of have the googly eyes about Deshaun Watson as well before all the legal issues came about. But if you're one of these other 51 guys on this roster, right, there's going to be 53, and Drew Locke and Teddy are probably going to make the team if Aaron Rodgers doesn't come here. How do you deal with all this added outside noise when it comes to the Aaron Rodgers saga?
Well, it's a very good question, O, and I'll tell you this. This team has to have great leadership on it, and that starts at the top. You know, the head guy really gets in a squad meeting and gets in front of everybody and says, look, it's our job as coaches who determine the 53 are, and we'll do that. We need you to support each other, love each other, be there for each other. But it's us, our coaches, our decision, and our leadership to pick those 53. And we're going to go with the 53 that we think that are going to give us the best chance to win. And I'll tell you what, when you hear people chirping in the locker room and talking about this is my guy, that's my guy, there's not enough leadership from the top. The leadership has to come from the top, and I've seen it. I've seen it in college football at Alabama. I've seen it at LSU with a few coaches there. And I've seen it in the NFL. But I'm going to tell you what, out of 32 teams, I would say about 26 of them have great leadership from the top. A lot of coaches in the NFL think that football is the main thing, scheme, strategy, all that, personnel, and it is. But leadership is so undervalued in the NFL. It's one of the greatest things we value in the organizational context for the companies like Google and Apple. But guess what? Professional athletic teams are organizations at a core level, and they need leadership. And leadership means you get in front of everybody and say, look, this is our decision. We'll make these decisions. We just need you to be a player. Stay in your own lane. Be who you are, and that stops that chirping. But it's a very good question, O.
Vic Fangio has been known as a great leader, the so-called evil genius, as a defensive coordinator. Pat Shurmur has been a head coach before in the National Football League. Mike Shula, quarterback's coach, has been an offensive coordinator in the National Football League. All have had to show leadership qualities during those various assignments. what do they have to do to properly lead this team, whether it's the quarterback decision or any other personnel-related decisions? What kind of leadership do they need to show, and specifically with Fangio? Is he one of those 26, or is he still one on whom the question of leadership is kind of an open question, at least as a head coach?
Well, you know, Sandy, one of the things I look at in the NFL, and just so for the listeners to understand, I go into NFL teams and I work with them organizationally and helping them determine who's going to be their leaders, who's going to be their the people. And then also developing EVPs and GMs, executive vice presidents and GMs, how to develop their communication skills and leadership skills. You know, I think some people think that these people just come into these positions and they have all the qualities. You've seen in Orlando, you've seen this, where great coordinators have not panned out. They have not worked out. You look at Adam Gase. You look at Patricia in Detroit, going all the way back to here in Denver, you know, with the kid from New England. They have not panned out. And the reason why is because we don't give enough value to the organizational performance stuff, like communication skills, leadership skills.
Right.
So a professional football team is no different than Google or Apple in that they need their executives developed. Google and Apple bring in coaches on a regular basis, executive development coaches, to develop their leaders, continue. In the NFL, NBA, MLB, you don't see it as much. There's a lot of ego involved. It's like, well, I know football. You know, there's a coach that left here by the last name of Fox that lost his job because he said it's only about football. It's not only about football. It's about the leadership context, understanding who people are. You know, these guys underneath the pads, like Orlando can attest to this, they're human beings, and they will play their you-know-what offer you if they know you care about them as a person. And great leaders know how to value that. So, Sandy, the question is, I'm not sure if he's one of the 26, but we'll find out this season.
Doc, you've worked with the Broncos, specifically when they won that Super Bowl. Demaryius Thomas was on that football team. Just want to real quick, before we get into, you know, the mindset aspect, just what did you think of DT as a player as his career has just finally wrapped up? And also, you know, psychologically, I mean, when you look at a guy like DT, everything that's about him, even with his retirements, we were getting it last week when he announced his retirement, the drops, and he wasn't a top two wide receiver because of the drops. Do you think that, you know, what have you seen from him psychologically when you were working with him? Because he's one of the hardest workers that I've ever seen when I've in my 7 years in the NFL.
Yeah. You know, DT has a huge heart, and it, you know, you've been around him, you've seen it. I think about that season, oh, a lot. And, you know, I think about Emmanuel Sanders, E, and DT, you know, like the differences between them, even a Wes Welker that we had around the year before. But, you know, DT has a huge heart, and he's a kid that really loved the game, loved playing the game, was a freak from the neck down. I mean, the kid could run that kind of size. You just don't see that very often. But the one thing that I saw in DT that I thought could get better is understanding that, you know, you have to flush plays. When you have a bad play, when you have a bad series, a bad quarter, you got to flush it and move on. He was a very sensitive kid, and that's great in the real world, but in the world of NFL football, you've got to be able to flush. He was good enough physically to overcome those emotional deficits. But you know what? DT worked on it, and I got to give him all the credit in the world. He came in, and he worked on things. He did what we asked him to do. And like I said the other night on Channel 9, there's no doubt that he's going to be a success in his next chapter. But I think there's so many NFL players that struggle with the transition from active player to retired player. But I think DT will be one of those ones to raise his hand and ask for that help, because we have help out there in transition. We have programs that help NFL players and all pro sports transition from the active player into the retired world. Because here's the difference, and you know this, though. Your identity changes. And we saw that Abby Wambach, who is largely argued the best female soccer player to ever walk this planet, she struggled the first year after she retired. She got a DUI. She was shaving her head. She didn't know who she was, you know, beyond the soccer player. So DT is going to be a tremendous success because he's got a huge heart. And like you said, oh, he's a hard worker.
Tell us quickly before we let you run about what's going on at Think One.
I'll tell you what, Sandy, we're enjoying so much love at Think One. We work with athletes all the way from the pro level to high school. You know, my two sons are in high school, playing high school football, and we work with a lot of high school athletes, helping them get their mind right. That's the whole key. We have float tanks, biomats. We train people's brains through computer programs. It's called neurofeedback. But more than anything, we bring them in and teach them how to get the neck upright, because when you get the neck upright, then the neck down can perform to its true potential. And the sad thing about it is, Sandy, is so many athletes perform at 60, 70% of their true potential physically because they're not 100% from the neck up. We do the neck up work. We get them where they need to be so they can play to their true potential.
You're the best. Thank you, Dr. Perea. We appreciate it. Love you.
Thank you, guys. Love you guys. You're the best, too. We're a great team. Love you guys.
All right. There he goes, Dr. Rick Perea, performance psychologist to the stars. And performance psychology goes well beyond just sports psychology, as you just heard. And, by the way, I win the bet.